Ready, Freddie.
All right.
So I have a few structured exercises. The first thing I would like to do is just do a clean start. So I'm going to ask each of us and all of us for this session to be really useful for you. This session will be like what? Or, yeah, that's right. Doug, you want to go first?
So, over the weekend, I was able to be in the zone, be focused, read some of the readings that are coming up. And at this point, it's been nonstop. I literally parked my car after doing a long drive for my job and ran up here so I could make sure to get here on time. So I'm feeling like I need a relaxed time. So for this to be useful is, yeah, to provide the space for processing.
A relaxed time and provide the space for processing. And when a relaxed time, you will be like what?
Just melt in my chair. Just like lounging here.
Melt in my chair. Thank you. Michael, I'm going to ask you the same two questions. This is okay. Just to get us started.
Yeah, no, that's fine, John.
And for this session to be really useful for you, this session will be like what?
It will be like walking into the first day of a rehearsal of a play I'm actually participating in.
Oh, walking into a rehearsal. The first day of a play you are participating
in.
And for this session to be like a rehearsal of a play you are participating in, you will be like what?
I will be on the edge of excitement and full anxiety.
At the edge of excitement and full of anxiety?
Yeah. I can't tell the difference sometimes between the two.
That's a great contrast, you guys. Relaxation and melting into your chair and anxiety over here. Okay. I did a little drawing of my, this is sort of a desired outcome, but it's for this session I was focusing. Let me see if I can find it. Okay. A coherent we space. For this space, for this session to be really useful for me, this session will be like a coherent we space. And for this session to be like a coherent we space, I will have to be coherent. So wish me luck, guys.
Okay.
Okay, now here's the drawing I made. Can you see this?
Yes, I can. Oh.
Okay. So nice. I have birds on their own flying all around in different directions. And that's great. But a bird on its own can never go long distance anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
To go long distance, they need to have a flight pattern. And this is a flock of birds moving towards that long distance. And I'm seeing over here a sort of a skyscape, a mm-hmm. night version and a day version. And I see like the Big Dipper here. I see there's a pattern in the sky among the stars. So this is moving towards that, this coherent, moving from the individuals going their own different directions to a coherent direction. They're all moving in towards patterns and that long distance. And I'm curious because I have when I first wrote down, I didn't write, when I've jotted this down, I didn't write a coherent we space. I wrote down a cohort.
That has a good meaning, cohort. A
Freudian slip, I think. So I crossed that out. I said, no, not cohort, coherent. Okay, now, so there I have a desired outcome. And I also had these little comments up here. When a new pattern is recognized, the cosmos bifurcates. Mm. The more people who can recognize patterns, the more patterns you can examine for other patterns. So these are beliefs that I have that I want to make even stronger so that my behavior will reflect a more a coherent person who can co-create more coherent we spaces. So that sounds like a good start. So I would like to just have an open frame, and then where we could just go wherever we want to go about your dreams, your memories, your reflections about what you learned last time, what's been going on. And I would like to look at some of the talk about altered states of consciousness. And altered states of consciousness compared to what? There's always an implied state of consciousness that isn't altered. Mm-hmm. So I think that being able to contrast and compare different states of consciousness is would enable all of us to become even better pattern detectors and probably pattern makers. So does that sound okay with you guys?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I also wanted, I posted some of the developing questions, some of the clean language questions, and maybe I can use them with you guys. And then I could invite each of you to use them if you feel comfortable in examining each other's patterns. Whatever altered states, and we've already got some altered states described here. And I thought we could, using clean language, we could then facilitate one another in looking for patterns. So what is a pattern anyway? I'm not really sure. Okay, so that's part of the thing. That's what I'd like to learn. But I think basically a pattern is something that repeats. So when it repeats often enough, if we have the attention, we can look at it as a pattern of a different kind of pattern. So there are patterns like that repeat themselves, that reiterate, like you chop the onions, put it in the skillet, chop more onions, put it in the skillet, chop more onions, put it in the skillet, that task is over. So that's just reiteration. But then there are patterns that are recursive in their nature. They're more cyclical. There's different levels. One kind of behavior is observed from another level. And that's a kind of meta perspective that gets engaged in recursive patterns. So we live in a world where there's both kinds of patterns and many linear, nonlinear, chaotic, ordered. So what I find very fascinating is working with dream spaces, whether they're psychological dreams, lucid dreams, which I think is a kind of meta dream, because it's a dream about the dreaming process. You have to sort of step out of the ordinary dream to experience the dream at another level so that you're aware that you're dreaming. And then there are, I believe, what some people call out-of-body experiences, which you can get to by dropping the lucid dream and moving into something that really has very few... what's the word for this? I'm sort of searching for a word. Reference points. There are very few references there. I mean, we talk about the Akashic records. We talk about the astral plane. The higher astral, the lower astral. But a lot of this is derived from pre-scientific cultures. And I think we're sort of redoing all that and creating new maps by the recent discoveries of Stephen LaBerge and this is guy, Rory McSweeney, whose book I just read a year or so ago. He's a very, very good researcher. His day job, he's a dentist. At night, he's an active lucid dreamer. He did a study on mutual lucid dreaming. So anyway, with all of that, I would like us to maybe work on something a little specific here, if I have your permission.
Can I ask a question first?
Just sure, please. And also an open frame here. I was looking at the process.
But I was waiting for you to complete what you're saying.
Please.
Okay,
do.
So I may
please
be.
Stop me if I get too long.
I may be. Sometimes when you mention pattern, I understand the way you did, but I think of shapes when it comes to patterns. So how does that work into what you're saying about patterns? Because I might identify a pattern more by its shape than the reference points, you know, even though I understand what you're saying. And then I had a question because I know you know this, is Bateson's the pattern that connects? Is that the creating a pattern?
Or finding a pattern. They were a little of both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a tricky question. Do we discover these patterns or do we create those patterns? Douglas, were you going to say something?
I guess I'm digging deep into the brain, but going off of, I'm feeling a lot of connections or resonances at this moment within this conversation. The birds in the background, Michael decided to sit outside. Your drawing, my individual thoughts are the roaming birds that are not in formation. So my personal we space needs to develop before I can branch out to other individuals separate from my own body. But you asked, what is a pattern? And the cyclical motion of the pattern. So I'm thinking of birds. We had the free will conversation yesterday. And this goes along with alternate realities. This goes along with your experience that you talked about of the bird that crapped on your head and gave you a revelation into the alternate realms there. But I
definite bifurcation for sure. Yeah.
But this was an experience I had maybe back in April or May when we had the first free will conversation, and I might have notes on the post I wanted to post for everybody on that thread. And I never did because it was just too loose and it wasn't coherent. But it's feeling very relevant right now where I had started jogging and going up a steep hill, a park. That was my method of getting into alternate realities. No one was in this area. There's no sound of cars nearby. And I communicated with a bird. To the point that it sent me a message. I don't know how to explain it, but there was some sort of conversation with the bird. And I also taught it a new song, which may sound far-fetched or unbelievable, but it was I happened to be studying bird calls with my son. We found an app on the phone. So I recognized this as the white-throated sparrow. So I tried its song because it's not too hard to imitate, and then changed it up a little bit and it repeated what I did. Maybe that was part of its vocabulary already, but so that made me think about free will and all sorts of things. But right now this is coming through, so I just wanted to share that. So
Well, Doug, you're putting me into an altered state, that's for sure. I think these altered states of consciousness can blend quite rapidly. And I'm, so why don't we put a circle around this one? I could ask you a few clean questions right now of this experience.
Okay.
If this is okay with
you. Yeah, if we don't mind starting there, that's all right.
And then we could do, and then Michael, you were developing last time a first person description of lying down on the ground and feeling the earth and feeling the earth and feeling the space from which the earth and that relationship.
Right.
So that's another example of a state of consciousness.
Of what?
Of a state of consciousness.
Oh, okay.
That you were exploring.
Okay.
Describing.
And yes.
That kind of thing, that kind of description, clean languages, I think, can be a useful tool.
I agree.
Also, Doug, you mentioned you wrote this, and there's a slight difference between a written speech and the oral communication. Doug just gave us something directly. Last conversation we had, Michael, you gave an oral description, first person description, because I listened to the video again. Mm-hmm. And this one is something that was written by Doug. And mm-hmm. I just wanted to repeat it and offer this as an example of something that we could use clean language to examine.
Okay.
Further. So I'm quoting Doug here. A vivid flash or remembrance into another time, dream, past life. I was doing nightly reading with Sun and was transported, eyes open, to a known realm with a different child. This was vivid only in the absolute knowing of the memory. No direct visuals arrived in mind's eye or typical vision. I concluded that it is an alternative universe attributed to my dream work or some form of past life. So you can, so as I look at that statement, I can already see some levels. Because he gives you a first person description, but he's also going to another level from which he's going metacognitive. He's commenting upon his first person. So he says, in parentheses, dream, past life. He's transported, eyes open, to a known realm with a different child. And then at the end, the last sentence, he says, I concluded that it is an alternative universe attributed to my dream work or some form of past life. So it could be dream work, it could be some form of a past life. He's posing a meta question about his own a direct experience. So this is one of the reasons I wanted to proceed with caution, because when we are too quick to just start interpreting one another's stuff, we may be, I believe, it's like going into someone's garden and trampling on a thing, something that we thought was a weed, but it isn't. Something they had carefully planted. So I'm very reluctant when I'm in my metaphor here is someone else's dream is like their garden, and I'm a guest.
I agree.
And I don't make a whole lot of comments on how I think they should do their gardening, but I contribute if they want me to. So when I enter into someone's dreamscape, I look at I see these levels happening, and I know it's so easy to contaminate someone else's imaginary with my own imaginary. And that's what I love about clean language. And I hope that this becomes a tool that I can use, and I'll demonstrate it. And then maybe hopefully that you guys can use, because they're very simple questions. And you mentioned shape, Michael, and pattern, the relationship between pattern and shape. There's a big important element there. And one of the key clean language developing questions is, does it have a size or a shape? The invitation, of course, the question invites the perceptual space to be developed. These developing questions, I think there are four or five of them that I just posted, are basically designed to facilitate that the qualities, the qualia, the size, the shape. What kind of is that? Does it have a size or shape? Whereabouts is that? Is it on the inside? Is it on the outside? Just to locate in a perceptual space what the language is revealing. Then once you have a location, you can then start to ask about relationships, which is a different section of the clean language repertoire. But I think the most important thing to initially be able to do is to find those patterns, localize them, size, shape, where is that, what kind of is that, and listen very carefully to the responses you get, because the responses that you receive are the ones that you are then going to ask more clean questions of. So that's the strategy. I hope that's somewhat clear. Okay. Yeah. Did I freeze just now?
Yeah, you did. You froze.
We can still hear your audio, though.
You can hear my audio. Okay. Maybe I need to log out and log back in. I hope I'm not having...
We can wait for you.
Okay. Discuss among yourselves. I'll be right back.
Hey, Doug.
I'm listening.
Doug, yes. I just want to, you were talking about retreat, you know, when we were talking to you about mm-hmm. you retreating. That's why I like music. Van Morrison has a song, Retreat and View. So if you listen to the song, it's not about disengaging from the world. It's just stepping back so you can, you know,
just move properly forward.
Yeah, just noticing. That's why I like his music, because that's how I've come to view detachment.
I own all of Van Morrison's albums. So is it on wavelength? I can't remember.
That's on Born to Sing.
Okay. Great. There's so much of his stuff. So.
Yeah.
Are you there, John?
Yeah, I'm back.
All right.
And your face is moving.
Cool. Okay.
It looks like I'm frozen. Am I frozen here?
No. Huh.
Okay, great.
There it goes.
So where was I? Okay, so before we do all this, I just wanted to do a very simple exercise. Working with maps. And I think the value of this process is greatly enhanced when we, after we've acquired some data to, and have it embodied, to have an opportunity to create some kind of representation for that, a sketch or a doodle or a drawing, whatever. So that you have a layer, that's where I think those layers and those levels start to emerge. Metacognitive capacities start to get more refined as you go from speech to performing in that perceptual space, the language that you've come up with, and then to the sketch or the drawing or the representation, and then to share that. That's where I think we get into going from a personal to the space, and then we can start looking at patterns that connect that Bateson principle, as he believes nature basically is just connecting patterns all over the place, and that we are a part of nature. Our mind is a form of nature. Mm-hmm. So you got pencil and paper?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So I'm just going to do a little exercise. This is an exercise in memory, a very important skill to have, so that we can make these subtle distinctions between these different kinds of states of mind. So I would like you to... everyone went to high school here, I gather. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't we draw a map of your high school? And... in this map or sketch or drawing, include the auditorium, library, the gym, classroom, parking lot. them while you're making your map, if there are any memories, learning experiences that you're aware of. You might want to make a note of that, a few key words. Also, you might want to think about how you got to school. If you took public transit, or did you drive to school, or did someone drive you, or did you walk or ride a bike? You might want to trace that route to and from school. And when you're ready, just let me know.
Suppose I'm ready as I'll ever be.
Okay. You could always go into finer detail, I'm sure. So who would like to go first? Could you share your map? Michael, please.
Can you guys see this?
Can you hold it? Yeah, a little bit. Can you hold it up a little bit higher? Okay, a quad. I see quad.
And then there's buildings around. I probably used the wrong color.
Yeah. I see you. Yeah.
And up here is where we ate. These okay. are the classrooms. I think the library was here. Girls' gym, boys' gym, the big gym. Out here is a football field parking lot. I didn't draw it, but there was a what do you want to call it? A theater and choir. Building. Uh-huh. I didn't put it, and there was a big, I remember a flag post there, you know, an open space. And so I had to move through all these buildings, you know, and that.
And you moved through all these buildings?
Yeah, I had to cut across. I remember how I had to travel, you know. A lot of my memory begins with kinetic memory,
uh-huh.
more than even visual.
Uh-huh. And kinetic memory?
Yeah.
And moving across those?
Yeah, in between, and maybe, you know, spending time speaking to whoever, you know, I run across.
And speaking to others? And when the kinetic memory, is there anything else about kinetic memory when moving through buildings? And
yeah, I was going to, because you said write something, there is a level of anxiety and wanting to hide in plain sight. And moving between moving between different groups without belonging to any, except maybe when I was in sports, and mainly wrestling is probably was the group I felt most I belonged to.
And when wrestling, the group most belonged to, is there anything else about belong when wrestling is the group you most belong to?
Yeah, it was always a chore to belong.
Oh.
It's always a chore. And so something's coming up I want to add to this.
Please.
Because that was happening even in the house, in the home. Just because my mother and father, this is hindsight or back, come to find out, had certain mental issues and were not, what is it? they performed their duties as parents, but didn't necessarily nurture a sense of belonging.
And they did their duty as parents, but did not nurture a sense of belonging. And when a chore to belong, how old is that Michael? When
again, go ahead. I'm sorry.
When chore to belong.
It began, for some reason, I can't, there's no rational, it begins at 8 years old.
8 years old. And when 8 years old, what was 8 year old Michael wearing?
Okay. Well, I guess that would depend on the time of day. but what I that pops up is these olive green pants my mother bought from the stamp place, olive green and some kind of almost cowboy-ish t-shirt and tennis shoes. And I also had a buzzed haircut.
And a buzzed haircut and cowboyish shirt?
Yeah, shirt.
And olive green pants.
Yeah, and tennis shoes.
And tennis shoes.
Old style tennis shoes. Kenny shoes, Kenny tennis shoes.
And when 8 year old Michael, olive green pants, cowboyish shirt, tennis shoes, buzz cut. What does 8 year old Michael want to have happen?
I want to feel love. I want to feel like I belong.
You want to feel loved. You want to feel that you belong.
Right.
And can that happen?
Today it can. Today it is happening with this discussion.
Thank you. Is it okay if we pause, Michael? Okay. And if you would be so kind as to represent that, make a sketch or a doodle.
Okay.
That experience. And maybe update the map that you've already started.
Oh, okay.
And while you're doing that, Michael, I'm going to switch over to Doug.
Okay.
I apologize I have a lot of background noise here. I hope that's not too disturbing. But just treat it as part of the dream, right?
I like it. It sounds kind of like ambient, strange
music. Yeah, like a drone. Okay, Doug. So you know this routine. Can you show us your drawing or your map? Or?
So I am a little bit younger than the two of you, so my memory, I hope, is still intact. But so this is the kind of internal. This is the space after you walk in. This is like an awning or a sheltered covering at the front. And when Michael mentioned the flagpole, I remember one being right there. But this was kind of the get-together spot before going to class, or the auditorium. I remember some plays there and a few ceremonies. Cafeteria, library, didn't have enough room for classrooms and gym this way. I remember locker areas. I wasn't remembering any actual classroom activity, but more so activity that happened outside of school hours, either before or after school, specific friends. During that time they were renovating, there were a lot of separate trailers for classrooms. I remember it being very hot on certain days that the air conditioning wasn't working. But on the walk from the main building down, I had memories of probably my best friend and I would often play a game of shoving each other into couples making out, or the smoking group, and just kind of making fools of ourselves. So that was fun. I remember time down in the language arts trailer learning French, my French teacher. And I didn't do this during school hours, so I was smoking pot, but there was a lot of illegal activity going on at shop class, and I had shop class there. Lots of LSD experiences reported from friends, and suspensions as well. Remembering for some reason.
So there was shop class and there was illegal behavior, you said? There was smoking. There were couples making out. And you had a best friend that you acted out with. And how old is Doug?
So this time, this would be junior and senior year.
Junior and senior year, and French class. And French teacher. And is there anything else about that French class?
I guess that was my first experience of out of country travel. So I did go to France. I'm horrible with foreign language, so I made a fool of myself there when trying to communicate. But had a good time. I was, of course, painfully shy, even more than I am now. And but I just remember that being a good experience. School was generally a decent experience.
And you went to France. And when France, and feeling shy, what is there anything else about that when in France and feeling shy?
Communication in general, which is always a constant theme in my life. With foreign language, it's even harder, but.
And communication. And when communication is a big theme in your life, and France, and feeling shy, how old is Douglas when feeling shy in France?
I'm thinking of my son right now for some reason. So that would put me at 4 years old if I was to put myself in those shoes.
And 4-year-old.
It's very, various ages.
Various.
The core age is there. That core self, whatever age that might be, which is tends to be younger, tends to be preteen.
Oh, and preteen, and that younger core, 4 years old? And when 4 years old, what is 4 year old Doug wearing?
Some green overalls.
Green overalls. And is there anything else? 4 year old?
They're Oshkosh. Oshkosh brand, I guess, is what you call it.
And is there anything else about Oshkosh and green?
No.
And when in Oshkosh and green overalls, does 4 year old Doug have a size or a shape?
So, one of my first sexual memories, which I don't know at the time if it was sexual, but it was exploring female-male dynamics. And I know I was in overalls at the time, and we went behind a door with another maybe four-year-old and checked each other out. So.
And you went behind the door and checked each other out? And then what happened?
Not much memory after that.
Not much memory after that. And when not much memory after that, what does four-year-old Douglas, Doug, is that what they called you when you were 4 years old, Doug or Dougie? Did you have a nickname?
It's typically Douglas. My mom Doug. Called me Doug.
Mm-hmm. What does that four-year-old Doug want to have happen?
Self-discovery.
Self-discovery. And when four-year-old Doug wants self-discovery, is that what you would like to have happen, Doug?
Typically, always, yeah. There's some sort of need for that discovery.
And could you update your map or your drawing? And I'm going to switch over to Michael.
Well, what's the update?
Yeah, if you could update.
Just with a visual of the high school image, or
you went from the high school to the four-year-old, and to France.
Gotcha.
And you talked about that sexual experience or that pre-sexual experience, and there was a four-year-old who is wanting self-discovery, and an adult Doug who wants self-discovery. So with all of that, maybe you could update your map. And I can switch over to Michael. Hey, Michael.
Hi. This might be, tell me what you see.
I see like the top two thirds of the drawing. There I see much more. Okay. Okay.
Okay. And yeah, I use different colors. I'm the orange.
Uh-huh.
That's me, stick figure, and there's a yellow figure, that's a boy, man, friend. Over here is another stick figure that is a girl, woman. I label both of them. They're all naked. They're all naked because that's been my journey, is to use somewhat your language, is to strip away, mask, or be embrace vulnerability. I use different colors as how now there's more color in my life. And then in the quad, I wrote, I think it's right here, where I feel anxiety has moved into excitement and confidence. And I changed the color to confidence to purple. It's also the movement of the lines of color was on purpose because I feel that I've learned to, as part of embracing vulnerability, is to know that we are permeable, porous beings. I think that's about it.
And there's the confidence and the purple and the movement of lines of color. And there's a boy man in orange, and there's a girl woman, and all naked and stripped away masks and embracing vulnerability. And is there a relationship between that and the first day of rehearsal and being a performer?
Yes, there is a relationship. Yes, there is a relationship.
What kind of relationship? Is there anything else about that?
Well, the relationship from childhood of that 8-year-old child has moved from feeling that the excitement that's within my 8-year-old self, that in many ways was shut down for various reasons, is no longer, has moved. It's been a journey to kind of reconnect with the 8-year-old boy, man, and just work with the how anxiety and excitement bleed over into each other sometimes, but from an adult perspective versus an 8-year-old child that didn't have that skill set, it wasn't modeled to them.
And an 8-year-old child and an adult, and the 8-year-old child, that wasn't modeled to them.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a relationship,
mm-hmm,
and a reconnection,
mm-hmm,
feeling excited.
Yes. Yes.
And can we pause a moment, Michael? And I'm going to switch over to Doug, and then we can have a little open frame.
Maybe that's fine. That's fine, John. Thank you.
For patterns? Okay, great. Doug.
Hey.
And you, did you update your map?
Not much.
Did it come to you?
But I did have something that, so a name came up. Laura is her name. She was a great, great friend during high school. Connected with the French travel and school. And we were really good friends. Of course, at that time, friendship equals some sort of love. So I always carried that around with me. And her mother died of cancer senior year. We both went to the same college there in Tennessee, at least for the first half. And I guess since we're focused on alternate realities, it came to my mind that I was communicating with her mother's spirit, ghost, whatever. But at the same time, I was also doing my own fair share of mind-altering substances during that specific semester that this was happening. So I attributed
a lot of that to this, and I didn't know how to explain it to her, but her mom kept telling me to have her move out of that apartment complex she was in. But I never told her any of this, and we kind of lost communication over the years. So that came up for me.
And Laura and a great friend, and French, studied French together, and some kind of love and carrying that around and communicating to Laura's mother, her spirit, and mind-altering drugs, and how to explain this. And is there anything else about some kind of love carrying that around with you? Whereabouts is that some kind of love?
It's definitely a feeling, a heart type of feeling, which I noted. I tend to be a upper and lower region type of guy. So that feeling often is a searching feeling. Not with anyone in particular. It's often with eye contact with a stranger. Even as I'm happily married now, there's still that some sort of something can come out of this relationship. It doesn't have to be sexual or anything like that, but just some sort of stronger bonding can form, even from a simple gaze. And it's a searching that's going away as I get older, because I know it's a false, or not based on what I'm about now. There's no need to do that searching. It might be some sort of biological process that's going on that I am learning to examine, but not hone in on completely, I guess.
And when that feeling, that searching feeling, and false and fading, and that heart feeling, and when, what happens to communicating to the spirit of Laura's mother?
That was my only vivid experience of some communication there.
Is there anything else about that vivid experience?
No, not much, no. I should have been I should have been communicating directly with Laura or with these particular people, rather than playing eye games. There can be some sort of bonding through actual verbal communication.
And bonding, and not eye games, but bonding through actual verbal. And can that happen now?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what I'm developing.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So it's now almost 1 o'clock. So I guess we've been working for an hour, and could we take like a 5-minute break? If anyone needs to get a drink of water, go to the bathroom.
Okay.
And then could we do that? Could we just take maybe 2 minutes? 2 minutes, okay?
Okay.
So I'll be right back. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm ready to go. It's ready.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. I heard a little bit about what you said during our break, Doug, about gathering our flock. Mm-hmm. So I think that's cool that we going a lot. We can go in different directions, and then we can come together and make that long distance journey. And each of us can have our own metaphor. I'm very attached to that idea that healthy groups don't have to replay family dynamics and the sibling rivalry or getting attention of the teacher or the guru, that we can create different kinds of healthier, more mature kinds of relationships in groups. So I would love for us to be developing our skills here, and I believe that we are. I believe that this exercise in memory is really very important skill for working with altered states of consciousness. As most of you are aware, if you have a great eureka, but don't write it down very quickly or have a way of grounding it, it vanishes very quickly. So one of my inspirations for doing clean language is to try to find that when you have an opening to zoom in to some sort of detail and then amplify that. And then I believe it can become extremely generative, which I believe is each of you have demonstrated today that you have the skill and this facility to make recall and to, as you recall certain experiences, how the memory is very dynamic and fluid and can move all around. So we have a present, we have a past, we also have anticipations. And I think even in this brief exercise, we could see how fluid memory and time are. So I would like to do a little open frame. And if there's anything you learned from this experience that we've just had together, and if you were able to detect any patterns that you want to play with, and also, share your drawings again. And maybe we could then, out of this sort of open frame, decide together what we want to do next. Because I have some ideas about how we might develop this further. Okay? Sounds good?
Yeah, it does.
So I don't mind starting with just simply stating for me personally, the reason I've been as frazzled as I get, I typically stay grounded. If there's anything that's stressful, I will retreat away from it. I will shut down or go back to my shell. I'm not afraid to. And it's not necessarily a reaction to trauma or something like that. It's just my personal way of getting away from it. But it's been 2 weeks since we last met. And since then, my dream recall has been on decline. I typically don't have outside activities, but there's been a lot of those popping up. So my free time has been low, which equals less reading time, which equals less focused mind, which equals where I'm at right now. So I appreciate these types of conversations. It's almost a recharge for me in a lot of ways. So just wanted to throw out that appreciation and kind of ground you to where I'm at personally right now. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been 2 weeks since we met, and just to help me get into the rhythm of what I'm going to talk about is, so right after we had our talk, I had a Skype with my cousin, and she made the comment, "Boy, are you on fire?" You know, and I was telling her about our conversation of being able to connect to people to talk about things that I think about a lot. I even experience, and we have a good along the same lines. I mean, I can do it with her, but you know, it just seems to be in this year, I'm running into more people to have access to talk about. an exchange, you know, and kind of I guess it's kind of my hippie thing of freestyling. but the thing I like about this and with my cousin, freestyle doesn't mean, and John, you pointed this in one of your posts on the site. Now I've really learned that that doesn't mean without discipline, you know, that discipline actually can actually enlarge your sense of freestyle, I think, I of having to get past the binary that discipline and freestyle are mutually exclusive. I don't feel that way anymore, although, you know, depending on, it still comes up because sometimes I'm just in a low of paying attention who's across from me. And I don't know if this happened. Yeah, I think it did, because I think I told her about it and I told you about it. But about the incident, I don't know if I told you about the incident with a homeless guy that was in the coffee shop and being disruptive in a very bad way. And I engaged him. I consider that type of openness a form of alternate reality, because I seen the whole coffee shop just nobody doing nothing, you know? And I'm trying to be clear. It's not about jumping on him or, you know, trying to, you know, even judge him, but just take care of business. You know, that behavior is not acceptable. These two girls were frightened from his yelling and screaming. And so in the last 2 weeks, it's kind of heightened my receptivity to how within my day-to-day life, how things, there's no straight, you know, solid, straight and narrow in a sense. I mean, get down. It's heightened my sensitivity of being aware of I think it ties to my connection of the flow of reality, if I can put it that way. There's these different densities of reality, different, and it's elemental. You could almost categorize or metaphor of some feel like air, some feel liquid, some feels, you know, solid. Some feels just even beyond air, but, you know. And in terms of my nighttime dreams, and this is not a bad thing, because I, at my age, I've just learned that I get sleep when I get sleep. I take naps. But I've noticed, the first thing I've noticed is how my body feels when I wake up. It's almost like I'm coming back into a house from a vacation. And sometimes it's kind of stiff and, because it's muscular, it's stiff and hard to move. Other times it's, oh yeah, let's get up, get moving. You know? So that's been my experience the last 2 weeks.
Cool. And there's that freestyle and the flow of reality and the elemental and nighttime dream. And you also mentioned the incident with the homeless man and how no one was doing anything and you intervened. I didn't hear this story, but I get
I told you
that it was a positive experience.
Yes. Yeah.
And then the body feels after a night dreaming, how it feels coming back into a house.
Mm-hmm.
So so thank you both. This has been a real learning curve for me as well, because it's a challenge for me to do this online, in this format. If we were in the same room together, in a conference room or wherever, it would be very easy to facilitate and to time it in a way that's, you know, favorable to everybody.
Yeah.
That's why I was wanting to, you know, when that fellow who came on and we didn't know him and didn't even know he was on Cosmos, I was very reluctant to let him join because I don't know where he's coming from. And this is very delicate, what we're doing. this is, and it's very subtle. And it, and once again, that safe container becomes a high priority. And if other people are so inclined, we open this up to them, and this video is available to everyone in our community and even beyond our community, that's fine. Then we'll find new ways of working with that. but right now I just wanted to keep this this flow happening because I think the learning curve for me is that we can go very deep very quickly. And I believe that's because both of you have a facility with, you know, your own self-development, and you're okay with being vulnerable. And none of us are tough guys. We can be, but we don't have to be.
Yeah, to that point, I've gotten past trying to not be a tough guy because I know I can draw on it anytime.
Right. And when it's necessary, that love warrior is there. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. We need all those archetypes. So what I would like to propose, and I do this with sort of, because I had a dream this week. I have a whole taxonomy of altered states that I've sort of learned from my own experience and also from the experience, from my reading of others' experiences. You know, there's differences between dream, waking state, lucid dream, OBE, out-of-body experience. And I usually am very aware of the differences that are signals to me. Because for me, I have this book on out-of-body experience, this guy. I can't remember his name, but he's really good. And they often talk about this heightened vibrational state. And it's in the inner ear, starts to vibrate very strongly. Maybe you guys have had this experience while you're sleeping. And then you can often find that if you're comfortable with it and you stay centered, the vibration is an introduction to a highly altered state of consciousness. You can find yourself floating up above the body or below the body or to other dimensions, or you could explore even a physical location. So these kinds of out-of-body experiences or remote viewing, I think these are all family resemblances, these different kinds of altered states. And then there's the lucid dream, which I think stays more in the psychological, personal psychological, but with a metacognitive capacity that I think mirrors a lot of what's going on in our conversation today. Because we could go back into memories, we could go back into and reflect upon them and localize in our somatic intelligence those states and work with time, with different ages. So I think those are all, that kind of metacognitive capacity is something that happens in our dream states too. So I wanted to share, so I had like two, I had an OBE, an OBE that didn't happen. I had all the signals and I was just waiting for takeoff, but it didn't get off the landing pad. but I also had some psychological dreams that almost became, there was a metacognitive capacity, but that it didn't actually turn into lucidity. But I thought maybe I could share this with you. And if you guys would pretend that you're use the as if frame, that you're a clean language practitioner here. If you have those clean language questions that I posted, the developing questions, maybe you could ask me a few once I give you this dream report, you could ask me a few clean questions. And those clean language questions are, these are just developing questions. We're not going into, I think I asked you some more questions about relationships and about intentions and things like that, which I don't expect you'd be able to do, but you could ask just very simple clean questions, which I believe once you get, if you get comfortable with that, this could be a skill that you could use anywhere you wanted to, with your own internal process or in casual conversation with another person. I'm gonna draw my blinds here. I'm getting too much sun. So does that sound okay with you guys? Okay.
For me.
Okay, how do you feel, Doug? You've already been using some of these clean language questions. I've seen you informally sort of introduce them once in a while.
Yeah, they kind of seep in here and there. I just have so Michael, do you have if you'd like to, as Johnny does this, I'll allow you to take the lead.
Oh, that sounds great.
Okay, and also, Doug, you have the questions in front of you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and do you have the questions?
I have the answers to the questions.
Well, that's great. That saves me a lot of trouble. So it's, is there anything else about that? What kind of?
Yeah.
Does it have a size or shape?
Yeah.
Whereabouts is that? So they're like four developing questions.
Right.
And so it starts off, we're doing a little syntax here. And okay. When, blank.
The reaction.
You take my statement or a keyword, and okay. When you highlight that, mm-hmm. Is there anything else about that? And when blank, I'll give you a statement or a keyword, wherever you feel like you want to go with it.
Oh, okay.
And then, is there anything else about that? So I was walking down the street, and I saw this guy with a big smile. And when you were walking down the street and saw a guy with a big smile, is there anything else about that big smile? See what I mean?
Yes, I got you.
So okay. it's about how to phrase the question and how to fill in the blank with the content that the person has given you. Doug, I think you should do this with us together so you could take turns, okay?
Okay.
Is that okay with you, Doug?
Yeah, I've got the questions here and past life experience.
That's right. And you both had a very robust experience of it yourself. So I'm going to share with you a dream that I had like 2 nights ago. And normally I wouldn't share a dream like this in public because it's just simply a little on the weird side. But I think with this group, I think it's okay.
Okay.
And I think also part of this was triggered, I believe, by something Douglas said in our last session about, he said he didn't necessarily want to have an experience of meeting a dream lover who's dead. But when he said that, I immediately got a somatic experience. And I think that's in this dream. Anyway, I don't want to explain it or interpret it. I just wanted to share it and use this as a learning curve for all of us. So I'm just going to, it's about two paragraphs. There's actually a third paragraph, but I don't think I'm going to get into that one. And I'm only naming, so anyway, here it goes. And I'm saying this out loud from something that I've already written down. I am with my parents driving through a graveyard. My father is in the driver's seat, my mother on the passenger side. I am in the back seat. I can see partially opened coffins. The face of corpses are on view. I notice that some of the corpses have returned to life. I see them standing up and walking around and looking quite healthy, actually. And then I am thinking about Terry. He's a former lover who died decades ago. He was my first big lover, love affair. I have a communication with him. and we're in this apartment that feels a lot like the Upper West Side of Manhattan. We have very good rapport, but I have no clear memories of our communication. And as I'm reflecting upon this encounter with Terry, I try to figure out if he is alive or dead. I'm confused. And I question if I am in a memory of actual something that actually happened in Earth time or in another level of reality. And then it goes off into another dream, which I don't want to go into. But this I think was on the cusp of a lucid dream. And there was some metacognitive capacity because I was reflecting upon the dream as well as being in the dream. So if you guys would be so kind as to whatever comes up for you, whatever phrase or keyword you want to use, just put it in that clean language syntax. Does that sound good to you?
Yeah, John, I need to, can you give me those questions again? I think I misunderstood them.
Okay, do you have the questions, Doug?
Yeah, I can. It's the last post on the alternate reality.
Yeah, and I didn't copy it down. I just filled in the blanks. I missed.
Okay, and you don't have a way to access that right now?
I can give it to you. It's, is there anything else about that?
Yeah, okay.
What kind of is that? And does it have a size or a shape? And whereabouts is that? So those are the basic four developing questions that you always start out with. So Doug, you want to go first? Ask me a clean question, since you're a little more familiar with this.
So you mentioned your father and mother and being in the back seat. So is there anything else about that?
So let's put that in syntax. That's good. And when in the back seat with mother and father, is there anything else about back seat? Do you see how specific that gets? Mm-hmm. It makes me zoom in.
Okay.
So I'm self-modeling, and I'm getting you guys to model, be my co-modelers. Hopefully we're all gonna start flying in formation soon. So here we go. Could you ask me that again, Doug? You picked up back seat. Is that what you were gonna highlight?
So when father and mother in the front and back seat, is there anything else about the back seat?
And you were in the back seat, right?
Yes, you, Johnny, okay. Little Johnny.
Okay. Actually, I'm actually sort of grown up, but I'm aware of different times and places and relational vibrations with my parents. My father is dead, and he's driving. My mother is alive, she's on the passenger side, and I'm in the back seat. Feels very much like a typical family arrangement. I was in the back seat a lot while daddy was driving. And it feels normal.
So, and when there's this corpse or death, what kind of feeling does that give you? What kind of death is this?
Okay, that's cool. So you're jumping forward into corpse, the faces of the corpse on view?
So tying that in with your dream, but I don't know.
And so could you give me that question again? And when face of corpse? We'll do this together. So I said, I can see partially open coffins and the face of corpses on view. I notice that some of the corpses have returned to life. I see them standing up and walking around. So that refreshes your memory of what I, of how I described this. So where do you want to go with this? You want to go with the corpse?
So with the corpse coming back to life, the corpse and back to life, like, what kind of process is this coming back to life?
How about this one? And corpses have returned to life. Is there anything else about that life that they have returned to? How does that sound?
Okay.
You see how I've structured the clean question with that particular content? Okay. So could you ask me that again? Or your variation on that?
So when corpses and back to life, what kind of life is that?
Well, it's very odd, but it also feels kind of normal in a way. That I, here I'm in a graveyard with my parents and I'm seeing open coffins and I see the people coming back to life. And I think it's a good thing, but I don't find myself particularly surprised. It doesn't have a, which is kind of weird, actually. It's kind of weird that this doesn't surprise me very much.
And when Terry enters in and they're alive or dead, you've lost contact, lost communication. You mentioned no memory of communication. Is there something else about that lack of communication?
Right. In that dream, in the dream episode, I remember being with Terry and that we were in an apartment on the Upper West Side, but I was perplexed because Terry died years ago. And here I am having just had a conversation with him, which isn't very clear to me what the conversation was about, and having that puzzlement about, is Terry alive or dead? And, you know, and there's a sort of a confusion about where exactly I am.
So that would be my next question, I suppose, would be, so when, not knowing where you are, when unable to determine, with that, can you determine, like, whereabouts is that feeling?
It's a very familiar feeling, actually. It's sort of, it's sort of like being in the in-between. That liminal zone of it's not physical, it's not transphysical, where is it? It's sort of like Upper West Side of Manhattan, place I know, but I've never been in that apartment before. And who was this person, Terry, anyway? I mean, I'm not sure. He died decades ago. But there is a kind of, I guess also there is a kind of yearning in the dream to figure this out. This whole communication between those who have loved and that many of us have lost a lot of people, but that the love may still be, we still may be in communication. And how to get clearer about this. I guess that's a very big dilemma that's sort of being presented to me.
And when yearning and troubled communication or lack of communication, and in liminal zones, does that have a size or shape?
That's a good question. It's actually a kind of wave. It's hard to isolate any of the elements because it's more of a wave than it is a solid location. And there's a kind of, it's extremely unverbal, very nonverbal. The whole subject-object kind of setup doesn't work to adequately describe this is, which is essentially just vibrational, how the information comes and how metacognitive I can be so that I can parse the information in ways that are familiar enough so that I can apply some structure is extremely challenging. I've not come nowhere near, but I think there's it's certainly worth the effort that I think we're making to make these impossible kinds of experiences more recognizable. So that's as good as I can do for now. I hope that some of that came across. It's very confusing. But I'm not confused like about being confused. I'm sort of okay with the confusion. Because the yearning, I realize, is necessarily one of those qualities that makes for a desire to do these search and rescue missions that are happening in the in-between. I do think it's search and rescue is a good metaphor, because I think many souls are lost in these Bardo realms. And if any of us can make any kind of effort to rescue them, it's a good thing for them and for us. I hadn't expected to say that.
Sorry. I have one more question, maybe.
Oh, please.
So when this non-communication and a yearning to communicate, what kind of communication? Is that?
It's interesting because I think I gave a metaphor for it. Actually, it's a kind of search and rescue mission. It's almost like some big shipwreck and people are thrown out into the ocean, and some of us are in boats or rafts. And we look for those who are in the water, the choppy water, and we try to bring them into the little vessel or the little boat or the little raft. I get this rubber raft kind of feeling. And that then we can escort them to where they need to go.
Is there anything else about boats? Rats.
Well, I know these are metaphors. They translate a kind of non-ordinary awareness into something that is ordinary enough so that we can make sense. It's communicable. And I believe that's a useful exercise.
All right, and I wanted to stop there, but I also have one more question and then one request.
Cool.
So we don't have to go into it now, but how does this metaphor tie in with the I can't remember the Aboriginal group's name, but the ones that would travel and sense so well the currents of the ocean. Mm. How does that translate in between? Do you know which metaphor I'm talking about, or the Aboriginal tribe?
Yeah.
We the talked island. About it maybe a month ago. At, maybe they feel the currents shifting.
Oh,
with their,
you're talking about that balls. That conversation that we had about the Polynesian sailors.
Correct.
Be able to track large distances from island to island. They would sit in these boats that were deep in the ocean, and they could feel the current through their testicles. So they could, that's how close they were to the ocean, so that they could feel these very subtle changes in the current. So that's a very interesting leap there, Doug. And thank you for that, because I think you have very good instincts about where to go with this.
So that was in
the Aurobindo. Was that in the Aurobindo?
That was the end of the minor gesture.
Oh. Yeah.
And then I think Marco posted a movie about intuition.
Yeah.
In a different language. It was, and then we kept kind of referring to the minor gesture type of feeling within this group of intuitive Polynesian sailors.
Yeah, I actually got that from a book that I was studying on how these people had such incredible sensory acuity that they could make without maps, without compasses, mm-hmm. could just navigate large distances.
So my request to you is to make a drawing that connects what you said with your metaphor. Nice. So that's my assignment for you now or for the future.
And is there a relationship between those Polynesian sailors with their testicles sensing the current and this?
Yeah. Ooh,
there we
yeah.
go. There is.
As yeah. I recall, these sailors would watch the formation of birds, the patterns of the flight of the birds. And they would be an indicator of how close they were to an island. They would also look at the clouds. There are clouds here, over here. They would look at the level, the clouds, and the clouds that are higher and the clouds that were lower, and they could notice that the color, green, would be emanating right at the horizon level, so that that would be an indication of where an island was, because the light of the island, the green, would be reflected right underneath those clouds. So those are the kind of very subtle visual, and also they were singing songs to one another, and in the songs there's a lot of recorded history that they were able to reactivate in their group. So I think all of that is great, because I can work on a drawing. Maybe the next time we get together, I'll have it completed.
And
I'll post it too. I'll post it on the forum.
Just one comment about the actual first time going through the process. I felt like intervening or going against the questions there, because they are abrupt and disruptive in a certain way. So I found myself wanting to not necessarily interpret your feelings or what you were saying, but it's a good way for both the facilitator and the person, between me and you, to both listen and kind of shed any sort of interpretation at all. I didn't want to interpret your words or ideas, but I began doing that. And it's a challenge.
It is a challenge, and I think it sort of works against the grain of our casual kind of conversation, where we often interrupt with our own interpretive frameworks and impose it on someone else, or they say, "Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. I had an experience just like that." Blah blah blah. So I think you did a really good job of, and I know this, the clean language doesn't come just totally naturally, it's a practice. But if you're restricted to the questions, they are do constrain you. But the benefit to those constraints are you have to listen very carefully to what the person actually says, because you're very limited in what you can, how you can, the questions you ask. So I think that's the incredible value if you're looking for patterns, that this is a really good tool, because then you then the patterns start to pop up, and then you can start to find those relationships as you were already doing. And then you could go from that network of patterns to another network of patterns, as you did. You made a leap to another landscape entirely and asked if there was a relationship. And I believe there is. So I think your instincts are really good, Doug. So I hope you can continue to get some facility with these clean language questions, and maybe something we could take a little time next time we could practice. We could bring our dreams, our memories, our reflections to this forum, and maybe we could get really a little more fine-tuned, and we could sharpen our listening skills, and then we could also find the pattern that the person can then develop. Is there anything else about that? Does it have a size or shape? I think you used both of those questions. And then you went on further and asked about relationships, which is cool. So these questions can have a tremendous, they're very simple, but they have a lot of versatility, and they can deal with a great deal of complexity. And you can go into areas that most people don't go into. Like, I had no idea that search and rescue mission was a metaphor that just emerged out of your that kind of inquiry, and that is a very helpful one for me. I can sort of understand a lot of the weirdness that's been going on in these altered states of consciousness, and the desire to be of service in these Bardo realms, where people are very, very confused. And I'm as confused as anybody, because these are very confusing transitions that we're making, and the better we are being able to translate between these dimensions, I think the more patterns we're going to start to discover and to create. Michael, you didn't get a chance to ask any questions. I hope that's okay today. Maybe next time.
No, actually, it was very. It helped me understand how you're using the questions. I just mistook, because of the blank, I was supposed to fill in the blank, and I didn't understand about the drawing that fill in that blank with the content of what you're hearing. So I'm going to go back and write down those. And this has been informative to watch how he used them and how you do it, because it's interesting that, especially the one about size and shape, I have a tendency to ask friends that I'm in dialogue with when they tell me something, I go, what size and shape is that? And I'm being persnickety in the sense that the dialogue is getting kind of just abstract for me. Well, and that's the way I bring it back in. So it's just interesting. And like I said, I have dabbled in, read your stuff on red, but I haven't practiced, you know, so I kind of have a sense of the principles, but not the practice.
Right. This is
so cool. This is good to watch.
Yeah, I just want to offer this clean language as a tool that could complement other skill sets that you already have.
Right.
So,
right.
Any experience you've had in counseling or teaching or, you know, coaching others, this is just another technique.
And what's really significant that's coming into play is this listening.
Right.
The act and you know, through my meditation, deep listening. And I just want to say, as far as that goes, is because of my meditation practice, the deep listening I do is, even when I hear my voice trying to interpret it, I don't try to, I just say, it's like an airplane going by. It's there. So I'm not trying to over resist and keep my interpretive
part of my brain from popping up. My meditation has taught me to hold a bigger space for it by listening, like Doug was saying, to try to listen in that way.
I asked about, so I guess we could start thinking about wrapping up. At the beginning of our conversation, we did a clean start. And I asked, this was my clean start. And I wanted a coherent we space. Mm-hmm. And I believe I got what I wanted. A coherent we space.
I feel that way.
And Michael, you were wanting to be a first day of a rehearsal.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were going to be a performer, correct? I can't remember.
I don't know, be part of a play. I'm not necessarily a performer, but the first day of rehearsal where all the, you know, backstage, all the people come together and the director's going to lay out what we're going to do. So participate in a theatrical performance.
And did that happen today?
Yeah, it sure as fuck did.
Douglas, I apologize. I can't remember what your clean start was. Can you remember?
Basically, disorganization. It was the first bird picture there for me. I'm going in all directions and can't find time to read coherent message within. So,
yes, you were the bird metaphor. The bird imagery was triggering something for you.
And I thought it was funny too because I was thinking of my way of grouping together my birds into formation is to go to what I'm calling this hibernation, this dark retreat, this cave. And I thought of, well, maybe bats would be better. And then almost at that same moment, you said batson instead of bateson. when you were talking about the patterns that connect with that book, I was like, what? So there are two Freudian slips, even though we don't seem to, it seems like Freud's been debunked according to one of the threads there with Fred and that book he read. Freud still makes his appearance every now and then.
I have an issue with Freud because he had experiences with telepathy and the paranormal, and he denied them in order to preserve the integrity of his scientific research. I understand why he did that, but I also realized he was lying. And he was lying to his patients. And this is what caused the break with Freud. And I think he came up and he had a really lousy theory that got, I think, widely disseminated and created the conditions for a great deal of abuse. So I grant you he may have been a great psychologist, but I think he did a lot of harm. So I'm trying to do something different. anyway, that's sort of off the track, I guess, off the beaten track. But
John, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Yeah, I was listening to the Irreducible Mind, you know, and so this is maybe a dilemma I have, because you and I both go along about the somatic intelligence, and you made a comment about certain scientists being reducing everything down to biology, right? Okay, so this is a little bit, that I'm fuzzy on is, are we doing the same thing or are we expanding the biology? You know, you get what?
Yeah.
Some people think that when I talk about somatic, I'm just talking about, I'm overemphasizing biology and nothing else.
Well, I have this big book, Irreducible Mind. We read this together, a chapter from this, and we had that discussion about which chapter it was. It was the opening chapter.
Okay.
I should review that again. I can't remember exactly what I said, but I think there is a difference between biology and psychology and physics. And I think that interplay of different disciplines within science And when one discipline gets reduced to another discipline, we get into trouble. And I think I was thinking that psychology, the mind, cannot be reduced to neurons.
Right.
And the electrical, chemical activity of the organism. The mind is a different level. Right. And all efforts to turn mind into physics or biology, I believe, are doomed to inevitable distortions that make no sense.
Well, I made the comment yesterday, and I think Doug was there to witness it, as I think we don't know enough about the body to even come from a reductionist point of view, if I can put it that way. So that's the, now I understand what I'm talking about. That's the difference between what I'm trying to do of making or being aware of my own somatic intelligence versus just reducing everything down, psychology down to the body. I think we just don't appreciate the intelligence of the body. We need to, like, I like the way you do a good job, like, part in that conversation, can there be a differentiation without separation? Uh-huh. I really like that nuance because it's not that science, the neuroscience has something to offer, but the way I'm using it is, wow, my brain works that way? That's interesting, you know? But not get all lost into, you know, collapsing it.
Well, I think you mentioned earlier about when you ask about does that have a size or shape, when you sort of get frustrated by conversations that are getting overly abstract.
Yeah.
And hyper-theoretical. And, you know, I think that being able to move gracefully from percept to concept is another skill.
Okay.
And I think that that both of them, the conceptual and the perceptual, can facilitate one another so that we can go back into conceptual areas and our concepts will be clearer and more coherent because we've reconnected them to something in our soma. So that somatic intelligence I think of is primarily the midsection of the body.
Okay.
And you find a location. Does it have a size or shape? Whereabouts? A feeling in the heart. Whereabouts in the heart? In the center of the heart. And then once you're at that location, you can develop that. And then the head and the heart and the gut can start communicating.
Right on.
And I have this book. This is On Clean Language by a body worker, Nick Pohl. It's called Words That Touch.
Words That Touch?
Yeah. He has some wonderful chapter on the somatic porges.
You said Nick Pohl?
Yeah, Nick Pohl. 12 Essential Clean Questions for Mind-Body Therapists. And I think he works in shiatsu, but he does a lot of touch, and he will ask people clean questions about their experience while they're working with massage or body work. And he gets really good results with his clients. But I think that is a really interesting area of exploration.
Have you ever run across a book called The Expressive Body about the way Greeks, you know, medicine and Chinese medicine? It was written in 2012 by a Harvard person. I just ran across it, and I'm going to get it. But I listened to a talk on a Harvard station. It was about pulse, the pulse of the body, and how the Chinese read the pulse in like an acupuncture, different places, not here. And one of the distinctions they made in terms of the Greeks is pulse turned into a measurement of just measuring rate because they were more established in the muscles of the bodies, and the Chinese were at a different level, and because of the meridians, and they say reading the pulse in Chinese came before acupuncture, being able to read the pulse, which now I'm connecting a meta pattern to the way sailors with their testicles read the currents of the water.
Yes.
A movement, you know?
Yes. I think this is very encouraging, and one of the my desired outcomes is really becoming more facile with meta, what I call meta modeling, which is what you're just doing. You look at this model, you look at that model, you look at the relationship between these two models and what pops up to be a third model.
Exactly.
And, I believe that's a really healthy trend rather than getting just trapped in one model and seeing, you know, not one model fits every occasion or every person for sure, or every group of individuals.
Right.
So that's part of this, the fun of this practice.
And so I'm just kind of riffing off of what you just said. Then the liminal spaces, which you build between the models.
That's right. I think on our, were you at the astrology, evolutionary astrology?
No, Amanda, but I listened to it.
She talks about the bridge between the gaps.
Yeah.
And right. I think we have lots of gaps in our world.
Right.
Between theories and between, you know, the Chinese and the Greeks and different kinds of medicine, different kinds of practices that have throughout our history, and we have access to a lot more information than we've ever had before. So I'm really wondering about how the new patterns that can start emerging. We get more sensitive to our pattern detection, how we can fill in these gaps or create those bridges. And I think that's happening. I think the cosmos bifurcated a couple of times in our session.
Yeah, because I really appreciate, just coming from my intense trauma, this has been helpful to understand how part of my trauma, which one of the things I've learned out of healing through trauma, is facing into how I had, unbeknownst to me in many ways, habituated a certain relationship between perception and conception.
Right. That's right. And we're all re-educating ourselves.
And so a lot of my work, actually, a lot of my work up to this point has been just healing that.
Right.
Now I feel I'm moving into an area that you have a lot of passion for, of kind of rebuilding or working with conception and perception in a more holistic way.
That's right.
So that's what I'm getting from this and being part of the cosmos community. Sometimes it's way over my head, so I just have to go, okay, breathe, Mike, breathe.
It's way over my head. I think we're all, it's way over our heads, but I think we're doing the best that we can.
Exactly.
These really choppy waters sometimes. And I think we have good days and we have our off days, and they're both important to that.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Very much. Thank you.
Well, thank you, guys. I think we're right on the hour. Any final thoughts, Douglas or Michael?
I have my final thoughts. Doug, what you got to say?
And also about our next session. What we want to do, or we can think about.
I am interested in personal techniques that people are exploring. Michael's mentioned the daydreaming, which I don't think you dove too deep into. You mentioned it and maybe explained it a little bit, but I assume it's not just sitting there kind of daydreaming is typically thought. It's more of an actual process. Maybe that's, and I want to see how that's related to my personal practice of meditation during the daytime. Something else that just came up with what you said, Michael, is, and I know Marco is kind of focused on this in the background with a lot of more of the business side of cosmos in general, like what can we contribute, or what would we like to be able to do? And I was just, what, maybe, because it's in the back of my mind right now, like how could this be better for you? Or is there something you personally would like to lead out? I know you like these conversations here. This is just coming off the top of my head. I'm not asking you to do anything. But I got involved with this site. I'm some sort of moderator on the site just because
it came up and I had some free time. I don't have free time this week, so I'm not doing diddly squat with the site this week. But so it's just a group effort. So you mentioned being so involved, and I feel like you're a good person and have a strong heart and enthusiasm. And I don't have much technical know-how, and but if I'm able to do this, then that's great. And we can, if you have any ideas of conversations you'd like to have or something you can offer, it doesn't have to be physical time or anything like that, but I like the direction you go in your conversations, the words you're saying. Mm-hmm. So just keep that in the back of your mind. I'd like to
I
hear
will.
More from you.
I will, and just to give you feedback, I'd like to have a couple more sessions with you guys to really feel a little more skill around the use of Kling language, because I do like that approach, just to feel a little more confidence to step up and participate. When I, you know, I'm enthused, so I'm not negating it. It's just I'm not sure. I'm up to my knees. I'm up to my knees right now.
Right.
I love the water, but my trauma has taught me slow, baby, go slow.
Mm-hmm. I'm a great believer in the slow mind too.
Yeah.
And there was something you got, both of you triggered some, but I'll sort it out. But maybe on the forum, we could post our drawings, the drawings that you had today.
Okay.
And anything that comes up when you post those that you want to add?
Yeah, and the only thing about that is I got to kind of up my skill set on how to post them. I guess I somehow take a picture and...
Do you have a scanner in your library?
No, I don't.
I bet your library has a scanner, don't they? Most libraries do. But anyway...
Oh, I'll check it out.
Yeah, the public library almost always has a computer with a scanner. And,
okay.
And I think it's for maybe a nickel or a dime, they'll scan it for you.
Mm-hmm. Or if you're using a camera right now on a computer or something like that, I don't know, you might be able to take a picture.
Yeah, and then download it on the downloaded. Okay,
that would be cool.
Yeah, that's the step that I'm still getting used to some of the technical aspect of working the sites.
Well, I think the benefit of having a place where all the maps and the drawings or representations are put together, so
right.
You can see relationship between Michael's drawings, and there may be a relationship between Michael's drawing and Douglas's drawing, and John's
right.
drawing. So we can have these different maps.
Yeah.
This is more like spaces, enclosed spaces. And we can find connections between the spaces. So I think this is what the field effect is, and then there's the field starts to emerge out of the interplay of these bounded spaces. So that's another metaphor that I think is really useful that we could bring into this interview.
Okay.
So thank you guys very much.
So are we going to do it in 2 weeks? Is that
okay with you, Doug? Can you make it in 2 weeks?
That should be perfectly fine. I'll keep you all updated or send a question as to when it is, because that helps out too. And then I think after we have this coming Wednesday will be the Octavia Butler, and then there'll be a 3 week gap or 2 week gap before the third week. So we could potentially do two sessions.
That would be cool.
Two Wednesdays in a row.
We could really make this an intensive, you know, we could go into, I'll review this video and I'll take notes and I'll bring that to everyone's attention. What I pick up.
Yeah,
and I wish you guys would too.
John, I think just trying to put forth my needs a little bit, I'm going to take the questions, and I would like to actually practice like Doug, asking the questions so I can get the hang of it.
Sure. And you let me know whatever support you need.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to go down and do a better job of writing them out and understanding and revisiting this video. I think that'll help, but I just putting out there that maybe somewhere, you know, I can be the one that asks the questions of whatever.
Cool.
I have that. I'm practicing the facilitation.
That's great.
Okay.
That's part of my desired outcome too, is that we all become more skilled facilitators.
Right.
So when we're in other places and other settings, we can pull this out of your toolkit, you know?
Yeah, just to I've got a lot of influence as far as facilitation from Diane Musho Hamilton. I don't know if you know her.
I do. I've done a workshop with her. She's very good.
Yeah, and that's where some of my kind of cobbled together experience has come from. But I want to work with the way you're doing it too.
Cool. Very cool.
Anyway,
thank you guys.
Bless you guys.
I'll see you soon.
See ya.
Next time. See you, John.
Thanks, Doug.